What's up, everybody? This week we take a look at a comeback album from an overrated band and an underrated band all at the same time. 1997's Blur Blur. That and a whole lot more is to come on this week's episode of the 90s Podcast. Welcome to the show. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the 90s Podcast right here in the Because of Me Network. Hope you're doing well today, and I'm joined by Sarah Connolly. Sarah, how are you?
I'm good.
It's a fine Sunday morning here in Northwest Louisiana, is it not?
It is, and how are you this morning, dear?
I'm feeling fabulous.
Good. You should be fabulous. It's our anniversary.
It's our anniversary. We have been together now for 14 years married. Yay!
Yay!
Yes, the most awesomest 14 years of my life.
Almost?
My awesomest, not almost.
I thought you said almost
no,
awesomest.
Awesomest.
Uh-huh.
Don't get me in trouble. Don't get me No. We're not doing that today.
Okay.
So how you been?
I'm good. Just been working.
It's been a busy couple of weeks. Apologies for last week. I severely injured myself last week.
Yes.
And was not able to talk.
Yes.
I'm still feeling it right now, but that's okay. I'm doing a lot better than what I was.
Yes.
Note to self, don't sneeze, cough, and fake vomit all at the same time. It really, really hurts.
Yeah, only you could pull a muscle while sneezing in your side.
I know. I couldn't sleep for 2 days. It hurt really
bad. I know. As a person who's laid down next to you while you weren't sleeping, trust me, I know.
So, enough of this mindless banter.
Yes.
Why are we here today, Sarah?
We are here to talk about Blur's self-titled 1997 album.
Yes, their fifth album.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there were six albums in the 90s. You got to admire that dedication for a start. Six albums in 10 years is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But this one right here is got a very, very interesting backstory to it and a very, very interesting story to how it was recorded.
Ooh, story time.
So that's why we picked this. We'll do the track-to-track thing. We'll briefly go over track-to-track,
right?
Because it's a very, very difficult album to analyze. And we'll go over some of these tracks very, very briefly, very, very quickly, and some of them as in-depth as
we usually
go to. A little
more extensive,
yeah.
Yes.
But the album itself, how
right.
it came to be, fascinates the ever-loving charm out of me, because...
Tell us more.
Okay. Here's the deal, right?
Uh-huh. Picture it, Sicily.
Picture it.
London.
Essex. 1994.
Essex, 1994, yes.
Right, okay, so 1994.
Mm-hmm.
Britain is on the verge of a big musical explosion, right?
Ooh,
there's bands
wow.
like Pulp mm-hmm. and Suede mm-hmm. and Elastica, all, you know, all competing for that big
mm-hmm.
spot.
Right.
But the most established band out of all of those at that time was
mm-hmm.
Blur.
Right.
They're about to release their third album, Park Life.
Right.
Park Life, as we've discussed already
Park
on this podcast,
Life. Yes,
is absolutely phenomenal.
The people.
So many people.
So many people.
You can get us flagged on YouTube, stop.
Whatevs.
No, joking aside. Blur take up the mantle, right? This is pre-Oasis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is pre-Verve, Blur take up the mantle.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest band in Britain,
yes.
1994.
Yes.
And they won... They sweep the Brit Awards in 94,
yes.
95, excuse me. They won Best Band, Best Live Act, Best Video, Best Single. They won it all, right?
Yes.
They were the people's band at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of carried them through 1995 when they
right.
released The Great Escape.
Yes.
They won the Battle of Britpop, which was Oasis versus Blur, when
right.
they released singles on the same day. There's mitigating circumstances to that, which
yes.
we'll get into in maybe another episode. I don't know.
I don't think they should be declared the winner, but I will shush there.
Well, okay, for those of you interested, Oasis released one version of their single, and
mm-hmm.
Blur released two versions of their single.
Teeter, Teeter, Pumpkin Eaters.
That was allowed at the time. That allowed them to release more B-sides.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, you know, they were, you know, The Great Escape was heralded as a masterpiece by the music press, and at that point... Questions started being asked by the fans and
right.
the critics, because
right.
The Great Escape was certainly not a masterpiece.
Right.
It was the opposite of what a masterpiece actually is.
Right.
It was just because it had the Blur sticker on it that, you know.
Yeah.
So, up to, so between 1994 mm-hmm. and mid-1995, Blur were the band.
Yes.
Right? They were the best. They were critically the best band in Britain. They weren't right. selling as much as some of the other bands were, but they right. were critically front and center. Okay. Right? They what the music press and the music critics wanted to base this Britpop movement around.
Okay.
Forget Blur, forget Oasis, forget Pulp, forget Suede. Blur is
yes. It. They fit the mold.
They fit the mold, mm-hmm. right? Okay. And then it all went to crap. Very, very quickly. In the matter of a couple of weeks, they went from being from mm-hmm. up here, they went from the penthouse yeah. to the outhouse very, very quickly. Okay. Yes. So what happened?
How did that happen?
Well, it all centers around the Help album.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for our listeners, do you know what the Help album is?
Vaguely, but why don't you explain it to us there, Johnny?
Okay, the Help album was a project that the New Music Express, the NME,
right.
In conjunction with the charity War Child,
right.
released for children of the, I can't remember which war it was.
It went to be used for AIDS and the aid in the ongoing Bosnian War.
Yes. Bosnian War. And they had a kind of a weird way of doing it, right? They wanted to do as old school albums used to be done. So you record on a Monday, you mix it on a Tuesday, you release it on a Friday.
Right.
Right? And you promote it in between. So they had this who's who of music, of British musical acts come in mm-hmm. from Suede, Radiohead, Oasis, The Manx, right. Preachers, Pulp, to Paul Weller, Paul McCartney, a supergroup formed featuring members of Paul Weller's band, Paul McCartney's band, and Noel Gallagher called the Smoking Mojo Filters.
Yes.
You know, just this who's who. And they spent Monday in Abbey Road putting this stuff together. Now, you notice there's one name I didn't mention.
Damon?
Blur was not involved.
Ooh.
So that already shows you how respected they were by their peers for a start.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can be media darlings and everybody else hate you, yeah. which is kind of where they were.
They were.
Yeah.
Well, it gets worse. See, Help was a charity album.
Mm-hmm.
And technically was a mm-hmm. compilation album.
Yes.
Well, Food Records, which is Blur's record label, they decided they were going to fight the designation of the Help album as a traditional LP so that it wouldn't rank up on the album charts. Why? Because they released Help the same day that The Great Escape was released.
So they really fought a charity album?
They fought a charity album to get number one in the charts.
What a group of
beep! Now, this was the I want to clarify real quick. Yes. This was the record label, not the guys. The guys were like, why the hell are you doing this?
Right.
Blah, blah, blah.
Did they publicly stand up against it?
Well, this came out after the fact.
Okay, but did they still publicly stay?
I don't know.
Well, then it doesn't count.
Well,
many people could say, well, they fought it, but until Damon or Graham come out and say, we told them blah, 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 and we think it was blah, 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 then, meh.
Well, see, the problem was they screwed with the NME at this point. You got to understand how big the Rolling
Stones. What you give a chicken with the NME. Yeah,
that's what that lyric means.
Mm.
To mess with the NME in the UK at that time was the equivalent of messing with Rolling Stone. At that time,
here in the magazine in the US, yeah. Yes.
So you know, if the enemy put their faith behind you and you screwed them over, vengeance is going to be mm-hmm. kind of swift. So what happened is they failed in the Help album request. The Help yes. album went out as an LP anyway. It didn't matter because The Great Escape still hit number one and Help hit number three anyway.
Right, but it's still the point.
It's
that
the premise. It's the premise of it, not the
yeah
yeah. So,
I mean, you took food out of the mouths of children.
Well, that's true. And I mean, the retribution from the music press was swift.
I mean, refugee children at that.
From an ongoing Eastern European war. Sound familiar?
Okay, well, we're not going to go there
anyway. But anyway, so what happened was that their peers were already ticked off that they didn't, you know, they didn't volunteer for this album to begin with. Now they're mad that they're, you know, they're redesignating right. the album. NME mm-hmm. re-reviewed The Great Escape And it went from this generation's masterpiece to actually what it was, and it was a very, very average album.
Mm.
And it had some good songs. Charmless Man, mm-hmm. great song. Mm-hmm. Universal, great song.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Robinson's Quango, I have no idea what that means.
Right, right.
You know, it was very, very, you know.
So, needless to say, it was not fun to be Damon and Graham and Alex at the time.
No. Poor Dave always gets forgotten.
Mm-hmm. I know.
But what happened next was around about this time, it was time for the winter releases of mm-hmm. songs. Because see, in the UK, when you release an album, it has a year's lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
And you release a spring, summer, autumn.
Right. Winter, yeah, singles. Yeah. Right?
So, you know, Roll With It and Country House were the summer singles.
Mm-hmm.
So we come up to the fall,
mm-hmm.
and Pulp release Common People,
mm-hmm.
which I still believe is the unofficial national anthem of the UK.
Mm-hmm. I love that song.
Beautiful song. It, if you've never heard it, I recommend you find it as soon as possible. And if you have heard it, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
It talks about how rich people, there was a certain rich person who made fun of being poor and wanted to be poor just for the clout.
Yeah.
And
yeah. You'd have to listen to it. We're going to have to do another episode.
We have to do an episode on that song. Yeah. I mean, it's phenomenal. And Oasis released a certain song that's still played to this day by everybody wielding a guitar, Wonderwall.
Mm-hmm.
So these two songs, right, they're seen as authentic
right.
songs.
Right.
And then Blur released the Universal. I said a minute ago, Universal's a great song, but it's not the Britpop working class.
Well, Blur weren't seen as working class, so nothing they could have done.
Exactly. Nothing they could have done could have right. prepared them for this backlash.
Right.
Because the Universal was seen as overindulgent and just
yeah.
over the top,
yeah.
and I don't think it was.
Well, I mean, it's all in the
but in the
sphere of what they were dealing with at the moment.
But that got them labeled then, not as a Britpop band, but as an inauthentic middle-class pop band.
Mm.
Now, there's nothing more insulting as a working class person from the UK to be mm-hmm. called middle class.
Mm.
Because there's different connotations. You know, with working class, you're seen as mm. hardworking. And,
yeah.
you know, it's not like over in America where the middle class is the equivalent of the working class.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So the band were further humiliated at the 1996 Brit Awards. So from October to February, right, they went from being the biggest band in Britain,
mm-hmm.
riding high,
mm-hmm.
to being mocked on stage by every single band that went up there, particularly Oasis mocking them about
yeah.
three times.
Yeah.
And because they didn't win any awards, they didn't have a voice back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were in the doghouse, the music press, they couldn't retort, they couldn't mm-hmm. go to the magazines and complain. You know, this left Damon Albarn feeling stupid and confused. And Alex James would say in Select magazine, quote, "After being the people's hero, Damon was the people's for a short period. Basically, he was a loser, and very publicly."
Hmm.
So that's outside the band. Now, you'd think at this point,
right,
the guys would rally together, put their hands down. Right?
For those wondering, that noise was...
It was my pen blowing apart.
Fidgy McFidgerton over here likes to click his pen and play with his pen. Is that one of the good ones?
Yes.
You broke a Sharpie pen?
Yes.
Okay, this is totally not sponsored, but those, if you haven't tried one of the Sharpie gel pens.
It still writes.
Okay, I understand it still writes. You messed with the little clip part of it. But I will say that those bad boys glide on paper like Christy Yamaguchi used to on ice. They are amazing. And they come all the way down to a 0.38, which is my favorite. John uses a 0.7 because he likes...
I like to see my words.
Yeah, but yes. I like a thin, crisp line. But yes, those, they're fabulous. And he broke his pen.
Anyway.
Okay, sorry.
Rock and roll, everybody. Yes. Rock and roll. So you'd think that the band would stick together and,
yes.
you know, be creating us versus them mentality.
Woe is
siege
Damon.
Mentality. You know, get their record label to pump out some press mm-mm. releases. Stick to doing fantastic, phenomenal shows and releasing the best work that they can to try and get everyone back on side.
Yeah, but obviously that's not what happened.
And you would be right.
Correct.
In that career. The band was literally falling apart. You know, Graham Coxon was just he was sick and tired of the kind of media circus that was following them.
Mm.
He's tired of Damon Albarn's control of the band, mm-hmm, creatively. He's tired of Alex James's playboy lifestyle.
Right.
You know, things deteriorated to the point where TV performance nearly... Now, you know how TV performances work.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, TV performances very rarely played live music.
Right. It's pre-recorded.
It's pre-recorded or lip-synced from the record.
Right.
So, this Italian TV show was expecting Blur to show up. And who showed up? Damon Albarn, mm-hmm, and Dave Rowntree.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else. They were replaced by a cardboard cutout and a roadie miming bass guitar, mm-hmm, just to get through their performance of Charmless Man on this show. Coxon basically ran away from the band and started locking himself in his house and listened to anything outside the Britpop scene.
Right.
So he was listening to underground USX like Pavement, Lo-Fi, and he said, and I quote, "A lot of them were doing very interesting stuff with guitars, and I needed to be nourished. I suppose as a guitar player, there was none of that happening in English music, mm-hmm, although English music was now more popular. So I started listening to more stuff from the States, from smaller labels," he said, in the No Distance Left Run documentary.
Mm-hmm.
So, what happened was Graham Coxon started shoving these records in Damon's face.
Mm-hmm.
"You have to listen to this, listen to this, listen to this, listen to this. You have to listen."
Mm-hmm.
And he started listening to it and realized, you know what, we need to change.
We need to fit in.
He can write pop songs at a piano with a story.
But he needed a rock song.
He needed to change. There was a song on Great Escape called "Dan Abnormal," for example, which is just an anagram of Damon Albarn.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just making up characters. Very briefly.
He was dialing it in at that point.
Yeah. Not in a bad way. He was doing his best effort, but he dialed into a formula that wasn't quite the fit that they needed. Mm-hmm. You know?
Ironically, that's almost the same formula that he ended up tweaking with Gorillaz years later.
Yes. But,
Clint Eastwood could have gone on that album.
Yeah. Probably. And we see some early Gorillaz work in this album, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, so what happened is they sat down with their long-term producer and figured out how they could strip their sound completely down.
Right.
And during this, Graham Coxon did something that you and I would probably never do. He sat down and wrote a letter to his bandmate. Now, mm-hmm, that's... To me, I first read that, I went, why don't you just call him? But I think some things need to be said without interruption. Yes. So he wrote a letter and he wanted to make music that would, quote, scare people again.
Mm-hmm.
So the band got back together and started, you know, practicing and jamming. And they started doing it in London, but they moved the sessions
to Reykjavik.
To Reykjavik in Iceland.
Yes.
So they needed to get as far away from British music, British media, as possible. So instead of bringing any material to the sessions, they just jammed. Stephen Street said in The Observer, and I quote, Blur had decided the commercial pressures and writing hit singles was not going to be the main consideration anymore. The mood in the studio was very different from when I first worked with them. In the studio, once we got past those first few days where I felt everyone was treading on eggshells, there was a great atmosphere. I think that was because they didn't want to be competing with anyone on this record. They wanted to make a record that would keep the band together.
Ooh, nice.
So they had a moment of like, you know, screw this band, I'm going home. And now they're back together again and all on the same page, which I think was definitely needed.
Okay, yes.
You know, so the recording process took 7 months, which mm-hmm. in that time was an age to create an album.
Yes.
And it was done under the radar.
Ooh.
So
you can't do that anymore today. No. Not with the interwebs being what they are.
Well, see, they'd fallen out of favor so far.
They
weren't being chased. Exactly. I mean, even though Oasis has stopped... Okay, you got to understand. While Blur were in Reykjavik making this album, the music press was focused on Nebworth Park.
Well, then, and the fact that Reykjavik isn't known for its big paparazzi scene.
No, true. But there weren't even reports of them being in Reykjavik. There was nothing. They were like, they were persona non grata. They mm-hmm. No interviews, no calling Damon to rub it in his face, nothing.
Right.
That's how far they'd fallen. Instead of rubbing their enemy's success right in their face,
right,
they didn't do anything. So what happened next was in January of 1997, they released Beetlebum.
Mm-hmm.
Which nobody was prepared for and sounded completely different to Charmless Man, which was released a year earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And that set everything along its way.
Yes.
To what we're talking about today.
And so now, let's talk track.
Talk track. Hey.
Hey. Ba-dum-bum.
Talk trash.
Okay.
So they released Beetlebum.
Yes.
Beetlebum.
I love this song. It was the comeback single.
Yep.
You know, it was a complete departure, as you said, from what they had before, with fuzzy guitar and mumbly style lyrics at the beginning.
Yeah.
From anything, you know, like I said, from anything the band had done before.
I love that guitar slide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And seeing Damon actually playing guitar live was weird for people because that wasn't something that had been done before.
Not often. I mean, he'd done acoustic sessions before,
right.
But like he would always sit behind his Hammond,
right,
or his, you know, his piano or something like that. And him to actually get up and play an acoustic was,
yeah,
was slightly jarring.
Yeah, it's not based on a character, which was usually what Blur was known for at the time.
Yeah.
And it was known about heroin addiction and or experimentation, which is unfortunately what Damon and his longtime girlfriend, Justine Frenchman, had been going through at the time.
Yeah, Damon's heroin addiction was legend among his peers, but not public.
Right.
Which is very, very weird because, you know, you had the rest of the bands talking about how much E and coke,
yeah,
and they were doing,
yeah,
and this went completely under the public radar.
Yeah,
not the, you know, the, everybody knew what was going on. I think it was the stigma of heroin for Kurt Cobain, because that was very, very publicized, mm-hmm, in British music press.
Yeah,
and everyone would have probably thought that he was on his way to,
yeah, you know, yeah,
downward.
And plus, I mean, heroin has always had, like, coke is, especially in rock, it's like, okay, whatever.
It's like having a cup of tea in the morning.
Right. Right. But, I mean, it's not, like, lauded, but it's not, you know what I mean?
It's expected.
And, right. And pills are the same way. But heroin has always just been, I don't know if it's because of how you take it or what, but heroin has always been, like, just dirty, you,
yeah,
know what I mean? Like, it's in music and whatever, and just in
general. I've known pillheads get offended by being off,
yeah,
of heroin.
Yeah, so, but anyway.
This song was going to be called Chasing the Beetle.
Yes.
Which, I guess, is a nod to Chasing the Dragon.
I don't know. You know, it's got a seedy sound.
It is
yeah,
a filthy song.
Yeah.
Yes, but somebody said that it's a Beatles tribute song. It's like listening to the entire White Album in a space of like 4 minutes.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, which part is number nine?
Yeah.
Number nine.
The number label nine did not care for it at first, and were kind of horrified when hearing the song. And they didn't think it would be a commercial. They figured it would be commercial suicide.
No, it was their first number one.
Right. Right. Exactly. Mean, sold over 200,000 copies.
Which is a lot. I mean, considering that 3 years later, Manic Street Preachers sold less than 100,000 copies to get to number one.
Mm-hmm.
Selling,
yeah,
200,000 was, you know. And plus, this was a January music thing. So it's just after, mm-hmm, Christmas. Everybody's got their new, mm-hmm, CDs and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, it's I think it's a fantastic song. I really do. I think that it sounds so much like nothing they've done before. But
right,
at the same time, his vocals, it's kind of a link,
mm-hmm,
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, his vocal style didn't change.
Yeah.
So you could tell, oh, this is a Blur song, because I can tell that's Damon Albarn's voice.
Right.
He's got a very distinctive voice too.
Now, the next song,
second track on the album.
Yes, second track on the album. Outside of, now, this song was popular around the world, but it's also, most people, is outside of the Gorillaz, if they know Damon Albarn's voice, it's from this song.
Yeah.
This song is the most popular Blur song, at least here.
Internationally,
yeah.
Definitely.
So, and so you should already know what the song that we're talking about.
Woo-hoo.
If we get rain, if we say Blur.
Oh, it's song two.
Woo! Yeah. All right.
Song two. Well, this is actually a parody song, if
mm-hmm,
you listen carefully. It's their little joke to the record label.
Right.
And it's a jab at the pop punk scene and the pop grunge scene. Not the, you know, not the grimy grunge scene and the grimy punk scene, but the, you know, the
right,
the inauthentic stuff that, you know, just is loud guitars with pop lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Although that could be Nirvana. But that's another story.
It's got that
day.
Very happy up and down. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, the song was originally composed as a music number with the woohoos as a whistle.
Mm-hmm. No, that would be horrible.
So what they did is they upped the tempo, added some, like, you know, squire guitar mm-hmm. behind it, and then introduced the fuzz and the bass and bada bing, bada boom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there it is. There's the song. The band wanted to use this track to make sure the label knew the direction of the album and, you know, to fuck with them a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Okay. It was the working title and it stuck.
Yep, song two, working title.
Mm-hmm.
2 minutes is one of the shorter songs on the album, so it's like Pop Scene and Bank Holiday in terms of energy and feel.
Right.
It doesn't have the polish.
And ironically, it hit number two on the UK music charts. But it broke the top 40 in the US music charts and on several, you know, around the world.
Yeah, now for those of you not in America, America has like 8 different music charts.
Mm-hmm.
From
yeah.
alternate rock, indie rock, yeah. so on and so forth. And they hit like top 40 in all of them. All the rock and pop related categories.
Right. If you owned a sports game in the late 90s, early 2000s.
You know this song.
This song was on it. Everything from FIFA to
South Park added in its game.
Guitar Hero Rock Band and former UFC middleweight champion Michael Bisping used this as his theme music.
Woohoo!
Right?
So, yeah, I think, you know, this I think is the best advert for the album. I didn't know it was Blur when I first heard it.
And right?
I said Beetlebum, you can hear Damon's voice.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, you know, it didn't click with me when I first heard it.
Mm-hmm.
The first couple of times I heard it. It's like, oh, that's Blur. Okay, fair enough. Next song is a song called Country Sad Ballad Man.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of... It's a shot of people who are nothing but celebrities.
Right.
You know, so like one of the lyrics is, come on in, VIP 223. You know, saying like all famous people think that they're special, but they're right. not special. How many VIPs are there if, you know, if everyone's a VIP... then nobody's a VIP.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's very, very lo-fi sound. It's very, very slow.
Yeah.
Picks up, it's got, like, sound effects and boings and stuff like that in the background.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, it feels very, very sleepy and almost country-ish.
Yes. The next song was M.O.R., and it's Blur, My Man Bowie, and Brian Eno.
Okay, so, Brian Eno and David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
There was an experiment that they had with this tune or melody line.
Right.
And they wrote many songs with the same chord progression, like Fantastic Voyage and Boys Keep Swinging.
Mm-hmm.
So Blur decided to take the tune and write their mm-hmm. own lyrics to it and, you know, give them credit and everything like
right.
that. M.O.R. stands for...
Middle of the Road.
Which is what... Something safe and not exciting, which is what right. Blur were before they took on this album.
Yes.
So, you know, it's about a relationship and if they stick the course, they'll be okay, but... Let's be normal and excited.
Right. Right. Next is On Your Own.
Yes. Now, this is... this song right here.
Yes.
This is the first blurry sounding song on the album, right? It was different in terms of lo-fi
yeah.
and stuff like that, but it was the first song that sounded like a Blur track, and it's track
right.
five. You know, totally deviates from the sound of the album. You've got like a keyboard and a drum pattern, which is kind of trippy.
Right.
And some fans believe that it's about an acid trip.
I could see that.
I mean, like the lyrics go, holy man tiptoed his way across the Ganges with the sound of magic music in his ears.
Mm-hmm.
We go happy day glow in the disco is the sound of magic music in our brains.
Yeah, it's
mushrooms,
yes.
basically, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, but however, being high on drugs, the consequences, you know, he blew all his money away. And in the choruses, I eat parole with a gold card soul.
Yeah.
You know, so on and so forth.
This is the third single from the album and hit number 5 in the UK, but did not chart in the US.
So it was a drastic come down. Song 2 was basically that one hit. And
yeah.
boom.
And Damon actually considers this song to be the first Gorillaz track.
Yeah, I can see that. Even though there are more tracks on this album that deserve Gorillaz status, this mm-hmm. one definitely is one of them.
Yeah.
And it probably showed that he's actually more... This album is all about starting to unlock potential, basically.
Right.
you know.
And next is an instrumental track that, and y'all know how I feel about those. I'm not the biggest fan, but it's called Theme from Retro.
Yeah, it's very, very Hammondy with fuzzy instruments and very
it's
very
an
trippy
LSD circus track.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, it's a bridge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It can drag though.
Right,
it really can drag. But
and then you have a Graham track called "You're So Great."
Now this song right here,
hit me.
Oh, let me
tell
say,
me about
let
it.
Let me say this. This is one of my favorite Blur songs.
Okay.
It really, really is. It's about Graham's struggle with alcoholism, right?
Okay.
And as I mentioned in the last video, last time we talked about Blur, you know, the band did have a lot of addiction issues mm-hmm. with alcohol and drugs.
Right.
And they tried to fight them. This is the first Blur song since Fire Out not to feature Damon on vocals, all even as lead lyricist. And it's the only, it's the first and only Blur song to feature Graham Coxon as the performer. So he's the only one doing this song.
He's the drummer, he's the guitarist, he's the bassist, yeah. He's the singer.
And there's
very
little. It's all guitar.
Yeah.
And a little bit of bass. No percussion.
That's right. I'm sorry.
You know, you're fine. And the lyrics are ambiguous, but it's definitely about his alcoholism. You know,
right.
There's a lyric in there, TT and coffee helps me start the day. TT and coffee shaking all the way. Because he's going through DTs at this point.
Right.
You know, that's what it's a beautiful song. That you can like, and it's so lo-fi. You can hear the hiss in the background. The production.
I love underproduced songs like that.
The production on the instruments is very, very. I mean, okay.
I mean, at times there's something to be said for, like, you know, the Spectre wall of sound, but I really love raw recordings.
Yeah, and just using two rhythm and a lead guitar, and the guitars are all his electric guitar.
Yeah.
That's a hallmark of Graham Coxon's guitar playing too. He's got to do things thrice.
Right.
I think. But this song, yeah, if you want to listen to any song off this album that's not song two, go
check
listen
it out.
To So Great.
Yeah. Next is Death of a Party, which is a very dark song. You know, the guitars or bass are muted, but in a good way.
Yep.
And the middle with the guitar effects is amazing. It's got Alex James and Dave Rowntree performing amazingly in here.
Yeah, I mean, it's later REM meets Pulp is
right.
this kind of song I can tell. It sounds like, you know, yeah, I mean, this is any way you can describe it, but
it's actually about AIDS. And, you know, it's a warning to people who continue to have unprotected sex that it will literally come back to haunt them.
Yeah, the main character is supposed to be the death of a party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
I bet we have to do an episode on this.
Yeah.
But I bet they watched Kids before they wrote this.
Probably.
That movie scared the ever-loving bejesus out of me. Okay. Some people think that this is a follow-up to the 1992 single Pop Scene.
Yeah, I mean, Pop Scene predicted that Britpop was the scene beginning, and this is kind of the end of it. You know, they were once the Godfathers, so I can see how it holds water. The party's over now. This is Blur's come down album from the Britpop scene.
Yeah.
They've released three of them. Now it's their come down.
That's it. It's we're done here. Yeah. And then we go from that to the next track, which is Chinese Bombs.
Oh, yes. Chinese Bombs is another Blur hallmarks type song. It's, again, producing the lo-fi style, but, again, it's got, like, the Pop Scene, the Bank Holiday.
All right.
2 minutes, in and out, you know.
Right.
Did you know that this song is about Bruce Lee?
Really?
Yes. Even though Lee is from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Yes. It seems very, very anti-Chinese, or at least the handover that Britain did for Hong Kong to China back in 97, I think it was. It's very, very loud, very, very fast-paced. It's very, very guitar-dominated.
Yeah.
You can barely hear the low end on it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's quick and trying to be entertaining, but I think it fails a little bit.
A little bit.
Just a little bit.
But then we go straight from that back into lo-fi with I'm Just a Killer for Your Love, which is very trip hop, and you know, again, this sounds very early Gorillaz.
Yeah, I mean, this was one of the few tracks not produced in Iceland. It was produced in Studio 13, which is where Blur came. You know, that's the inspiration of their next album was called 13. Some people believe this was just a jam that made it onto the record, and they're kind of right. This was due to be a B-side, and it was originally just to test the gear in the studio. It's lyrically surreal or nonsensical, depending on which way you.
I think somebody tapped into Noel's
Dr. Seuss book.
Yeah.
And had a little bit more of the mushrooms. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you have Look Inside America.
Yes, I love this song.
Do you now?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Okay. It kind of starts off like End of the Century, mm-hmm. which is one of my favorite blues songs to begin mm-hmm. with. I have a lot of favorite blues songs, but like when I say mm-hmm. one of my favorites, like top 10, top 5, right? Mm-hmm. And it's still got their lo-fi profile,
mm-hmm.
but it's kind of more poppy and more traditional blurry
yes.
than, you know, you give it credit for.
Yes.
It basically looks at Damon Albarn's relationship with America mm-hmm. and how... You know how he used to hate America, but now he appreciates it for the quirks and idiosyncrasies that happen. Especially, you know, the huge amount of quantity but not quality, as he calls it.
mm-hmm.
He says, "Go," you know, one of the lyrics, "go out and play second rate chatch, so it's a nationwide deal, so you got to go." You know,
right.
So, and I can see that. I'm not talking about playing the big boys, the late night TV. We're talking about like, you know, Channel 55,
right.
Daytime,
right.
You know,
Ricky Lake versus David Letterman.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You know, talking about how the UK panders to America mm-hmm. and has come to the conclusion that it's not his to be made, that he accepts the country for what it is.
Good job.
You know, it's very, very... It goes back to... Back to blues roots with the characters, the cheesy pop sound.
Right.
The wall of sound that's got it.
Right.
But it does it in a way that still surprisingly fits on the album.
Yes.
So it doesn't sound out of place. Great song. Again, go look this song up.
Next, we have Strange News from Another Star.
Yes. Now, this one is...
Very trippy.
Very, very trippy. Very, very trippy.
Surreal lyrics, acoustic guitar, combined with eerie keys and hard drums later in the song. It's very Bowie-esque.
Yeah, somebody on Song Meanings, mm-hmm. where I look up what the fan theories are behind right. certain songs, said that it's every David Bowie, every song on Ziggy Stardust rolled into one.
I could see that, yeah.
So, you know. It's, yeah, and it is primordial Good, Bad, and Queen.
Yeah, and again, it goes back lyrically to Damon's heroin addiction, and it's titled after a Hermann Hesse story of the same name.
Hermann Hesse.
Yes. Then we move on to Moving On, Ba-dum-bum.
Ba-dum-bum. This is transitional. This
right.
is, you know, it's Park Life with a little more grit to it.
Yeah, yeah.
It reminds me a lot, second R.E.M. comparison, reminds me a lot of Crush with Eyeliner by mm-hmm. R.E.M.
Yeah.
Distorted lyrics with yeah. guitars, which are crunchy. And the lyrics are basically a rant to the music industry. It's like, hey, we're moving on.
Right.
You know, so this right. is definitely, we're done with the Britpop, the enemies of the world, and if you don't like us, then
right.
that's your problem, not ours.
And then we wrap up with Essex Dogs.
Yes. Now, this right here, okay, you own
mm-hmm.
a DVD of U2's greatest hits video.
Somewhere, yes.
Something like that, yes. right? And there's a track on there where it's spoken word by The Edge.
Yes.
That's what this song kind of reminds me of. It's spoken word.
You know, the fact that you remember that I have that, and I've literally not cracked that case open in 18 years, and you remember that I have, that is so, this man, out of the two of us, you know, he will remember an argument from 12 years ago. I digress. It's our anniversary.
It's our anniversary.
So I love you.
Yes.
Yes.
We've reversed the gender roles in our relationship. Let's just leave it at that. Look, I can't.
Are you saying that's stereotypically female, John?
Well, you know what? I can't hammer a nail, but I can make
danger,
a
Will Robinson. Right, there you go. Okay. So Essex Dogs.
So it starts with simple up and down fading guitars.
Yes.
And then a simple beat, but this is basically spoken word. Mm-hmm. Damon talks about his hometown in Aldham, which is an area of Colchester, which is in Essex, just east of London.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said, quote, one of those burgeoning Thatcher experiments where they were building loads of small estates, you know, mm-hmm. workers' houses and stuff like that. And yeah, this is the thing, right? Blur are considered an inauthentic pop band, and I get it. Colchester is not exactly, you know, the hardest place in the world to grow up in.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it had the same problems, like unemployment, low school,
right,
you know,
right.
stuff like that the rest of them had. It's just it was down near London, so people thought it was cushy,
right.
you know. After Damon's monologue, the song continues for about 3 more minutes. It's one of the darkest songs that they've ever produced.
Yes, yes.
And then after Silence, we have another instrumental.
My favorite.
And then the album fades to black.
Yes.
So I'd give this album 8 out of 10.
7.5 out of 10.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's got...
It's got charm.
It's got charm. It is not a charmless album, but I'm bummed.
Very good.
And I love Beat a Bum, and I love Song 2. And I love, you know, some of the other aspects of the album, the other moments of the album. But an album as a whole, it, I mean, it's good. It's good. It's just not my favorite.
Okay. That's good. I think it's a well-done album. I mean, you know, the folder preceded it, it's definitely different to,
yes,
you know, it's not happy-go-lucky, cheeky-chappy, right, kind of thing. But the change in sound to go recording in 1995 to the change of sound to recording in 1996 is unbelievable.
Right, yeah.
It's unbelievable how they changed it so quickly and were good at what they did.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most personal album, too, at that point. I mean, Damon's songs about drug use, Graham's ode to his alcoholism, it garnered the band a little sympathy back. So they started to come back. And, you know, maybe the music press were slow to write them off, because the next album, 13, would deal with the breakup of Damon Albarn, Justine Frischmann.
Oh, yes, it would.
And go even deeper into, you know, he did the Graham thing of, okay, let's do lo-fi. Then he did the whole, okay, now let's make an album based on different style of music. You got gospel music on 13.
Yeah,
which is American gospel in British pop doesn't seem to... although that song is like 5 minutes too long.
Yes. Yes.
This is what I call the come down album. It's the first come down album from a major Britpop band, meaning that the party's over. Oasis wouldn't release theirs until 2000. Pulp would release theirs in 1999. And The Verve would release theirs in 1998.
Pulp would be what? This Is Hardcore?
Yes.
Yeah.
And okay. Oasis would be?
Salt Song?
Yes.
Okay.
And The Verve would be?
Not...
Urban Hymns.
Urban Hymns. Well, no, it'd be the one after, wouldn't it?
No, the Urban Hymns was definitely a come down from what they were trying to do.
Okay. I was trying to think of the name of the album after Urban Hymns.
But musically, this was a top-notch. There wasn't an album after Urban Hymns.
That's why my brain is going for nothing. What comes after? And I was like, I'm like looking around like the meme of the woman with the math equations floating in front of her face that she's darting around. I can't think of it because it doesn't exist. Okay.
You said the woman. If you hadn't said the woman, I'd be able to tell you who it was.
Oh, okay. So let's talk about, and he'll think of it before we finish up, the legacy of this album.
Yes, the legacy of this album. This...
You know, while it never reached the commercial heights on the Britpop scene, it did heal the band for the time being. Like, it got them to get over themselves and get back into, a studio.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's... Once a band starts falling apart, you have to do a lot to get it back together. And, you know... To get the band back on the same page for another few more years after was phenomenal.
Right. It wouldn't be until their eighth album, Think Tank, that they wrote another album in this style.
Yeah, because, I mean, 13 was more personal for Damon, and then they went back to producing lo-fi stuff. That didn't have Graham involved in it, though, unfortunately, because he...
Oh, that's right. He left at Think Tank. Yeah, he left to Magic Whip. Yeah.
And didn't come back to the Magic Whip, which I still haven't listened to, which I'm going to have to listen to now. I've broken my vow and got Spotify.
Yes. Well, we only got it for the kids, but never mind. Anyway, their next album, 13, was written from the perspective of, again, Damon's breakup with Justine Frischmann from Elastica.
It wasn't Justine Frischmann. It was Winona Ryder.
What? Oh, yeah.
The chick with the stuff is Winona Ryder.
Oh. No, yes. I'm talking about the older blonde lady, not the Winona Ryder confused me. Oh, I would have known who that was.
Okay. Anyway, no.
Anyway, Winona Ryder is.
Anyway, it is the breakup of Justine Frischmann. Damon Albarn was 13.
How are you going to act like I don't know who Winona Ryder is?
I don't know. I can't see.
I was an American teenager in a preteen in the late 80s and all through the 90s, and Stranger Things. Dude, how do I not know who no... Whatever.
Because sometimes your brain can draw a blank. Like, I forgot who Drew Barrymore was a couple of weeks ago.
How were we married?
Because my brain is like Swiss cheese.
Okay. I love you.
Is that fair enough? Okay. Anyway, this expansion of Damon's creativity led him to form Gorillaz. He also released two more bands to work on solo projects.
Feeling glad. Anyway, while expectations for Pulp and Oasis were high, they disappointed them with their follow-ups to Morning Glory and Different Class, respectively.
Yeah, Be Here Now was considered overproduced, and This Is Hardcore was not, was not what it was. It was...
I like This Is Hardcore.
Oh, I love This Is Hardcore.
Love, that's one
looking,
of my favorites.
Looking back, it's a phenomenal album. It's just they were expecting another Common People, and they got There Goes the Fear.
Have you seen the kid doing when Jarvis they had a contest to see who could do the Pulp album, and that little 9-year old boy comes out and starts singing This Is Hardcore, and everybody's just like. Okay.
But because of Morning Glory and Different Classes in regard to the Britpop scene, everybody was expecting the new albums to be even better, and they weren't. Whereas Blur,
they sort of hoo-to-hoo-to-hoo and snuck in under the radar.
Because nobody expected them to do anything. Right. You know, everybody expected them to break up, essentially.
And what's really weird, though, is the band actually don't like this album.
No, they consider it a step back, which is unfortunate because, you know, they realize it's an important step to get them where they wanted to be, but they compared it to another album, Modern Life is Rubbish, which was kind of... The change in sound was needed, but it didn't quite work for them. You know, it doesn't work for me, brother.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And...
But Dave and Graham overcame their alcoholism during...
During this time.
Yeah. Which is good.
They started doing, you know... Graham started delving deeper into more obscure music.
Browntree became an animator. And Alex James, though.
Alex James, being Alex James, is a cheesemaker.
Yes.
You know who Alex James reminds me of?
Mm.
David Williams.
Mm,
they
are
cut from the same cloth,
yes,
as it were. So that is it for Blur Blur. Do you have any more thoughts and insights onto this wonderful, wonderful piece of music before we go, or are we good?
We're good.
We're good. Sarah, great to have you on. We will have you back on next week. I'll be back here in a couple of minutes. All right, I'll see you guys later. Sarah, good to have you on.
Thank you, dear.
I'll be back here in a second.
Bye.
We got about a minute or so before we go ahead and get out of here. Thank you once again to Sarah Connolly for taking the time out of her busy day, for taking the time to talk to us. It's always good to have her on. She will be back next week for our season finale, where we talk about the one and only Batman and Robin. Yes, we wanted to go ahead and end this one on a funny one, so we're going to go ahead and get out here with Batman and Robin. An awful, awful movie, but one that... Well, you just have to see to believe it. We're going to go ahead and have a lot of fun with that. So Sarah will be on next week, and that will be our season finale, okay? We're going to be doing 9 episodes this season. We had a couple of weeks where we missed some time due to some technical errors, and last week where I hurt myself pretty bad. It was pretty bad. You might laugh about it, but it was really, really hard to go a week without sneezing. But that is it for the 90s podcast. Next week, we also have the 90s Gamer. Yes, the 90s Gamer is still going on. Our playthrough of Crash Bandicoot 2 Cortex Strikes Back is up on our YouTube channel. We're doing episodes 5 and 6. And we'll be talking about the future of that playthrough sometime next week as well, as we run into some technical difficulties. Wait until you see episode 7 to explain what is going on, okay? And that really is it for this episode. So again, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks Sarah for coming on. Hope you get to listen to this album if you haven't listened to it already. It's a really, really good album. So that is it. We will speak to you next week where we talk about Batman and Robin. And see you soon. Take it easy, everybody. Goodbye. Thank you.